Welcome to the BizNews Edge. I'm Alec Hogg. It's Tuesday, the 7th of July. Today's anchor story, William Sanderson Mayer, and he talks about John Steenhuisen's extraordinary interview. William calls it a ransom note. And after you hear why, well, you'll struggle to disagree. But first, three stories that you need to know today before we get into that big interview. National Treasury just did something that South African local government has not quite faced before and actually never really expected. It switched off the money. 65 municipalities, including Johannesburg, had their July equity share withheld this morning. That means the checks from the center aren't going to arrive. 69 municipalities in total are on the list. You can see a full list of them on biznews.com. That's roughly a quarter of the municipalities in South Africa. The trigger was billions, tens of billions, hundreds of billions in irregular and wasteful spending and unfunded budgets that keep multiplying instead of shrinking. Unfunded means we're going to spend more than we're going to get in, but we don't really care. And I guess that's what you get when you deploy inefficient and perhaps incompetent at best, corrupt at worst cadres. But the real headline comes out of Johannesburg. Herman Mashaba told my colleague Chris Steyn yesterday that the Joburg mayor, Dada Morero, admitted openly to him in a meeting that he had appointed the MMC of finance for Joburg. In other words, the person who holds the key, the purse strings, Margaret Arnolds, to run the numbers, not because she was capable, but in his own words, because I can control her. That's not mismanagement. That's the whole game in one sentence. And the government of national unity has lost patience. Here's the DA's deputy finance minister, Ashu Sarapan.
In excess of 60 municipalities that have failed to instill fiscal discipline and ensure that their public money is properly managed. We expect them to deal with unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure, and that municipal officials and office bearers are held accountable where required by law. This decision comes on persistent and serious non-compliance with the Municipal Financial Management Act and its regulations, despite support provided by the National Treasury through guidance, engagement, and formal and informal communication over many years.
Okay, so there's no surprise there. It has certainly, as far as Treasury and the DA's new impact on the government of national unity is concerned, we are seeing the finally, the plundering by cadres actually coming under some scrutiny, and indeed the taps being switched off for the first time. Not a bad thing, remembering that those taps are funded by you and I, by taxpayers. Pull it all together, the cadres have actually funded the place to oblivion. What concerns me, though, is they can get the tap switched back on as long as they have a 25%, get this, one quarter reduction in the amount that they're stealing, or what they call unauthorized expenditure. Unauthorized means you don't have to ask anybody for permission, you just spend it anyway, a quarter. It's a step in the right direction, and I guess that's the best that we can think of in this instance. Well, another step in the right direction was announced on the Stock Exchange News Service this morning by the team at 91. It used to be called Investec Asset Management, started by the founder and chief executive, Hendrik du Toit, who arrived there with a briefcase and a secretary. And boy, have they built it into quite a business. Well, today, Hendrik himself and other members of the top brass, including the chief financial officer, Kim McFarlane, added more shares to their already sizable holdings through their family trust. Shares listed in London, so they paid in pounds and they bought nearly 20 million rands worth. Well, it's not a big number given the wealth of those involved, and the market barely blinked. Thin volume, a soft share price already. But when founders buy the shares in their company, it's not a it's a signal, not noise. When the people who see the numbers every single day put their own money on the table, it's rarely because they think the stock is expensive. It's worth watching, 91. And here's a big story that you can read one of two ways. Shell has given its intention or noted to the South African public that it's moving out of South Africa. Today, a huge transaction was announced. It's out of the pump business. It's agreed to sell those 580 Shell forecourts, the Go Well, Go Shell, yellow and green operations, to a company from Abu Dhabi called ADNOC. Plus, they're selling off the wholesale, aviation, and lubricants operations. It's a $1 billion deal that's taken 2 years to put together. The Shell brand will stay on the pumps under license, which is an interesting development here. But the money and control now belongs in the UAE. ADNOC has also agreed to sell 28% of the new company to a local empowerment partner. It's the latest reshuffle of our fuel retail sector. Glencore bought Caltex. Vivo took acquired Engen from the Malaysians. Big Oil is certainly leaving South Africa's forecourts. John Steenhuisen's now infamous interview with News 24 landed like a grenade in DA circles in the last week. They've been running around trying to damage control, including a follow-up interview by Tony Leon, which those who watched it said was pretty good, gave the other side of the story. But I went to someone who's not has no peer in watching the South African political scene. His name is William Sanderson Meyer. His column has been running, it's called The Jaundice Eye, for more than three decades, which makes him easily the longest continuous columnist in South Africa on politics. I asked him why he thought that Steenhuisen chose to publish what William calls a ransom note and what it's costing Steenhuisen financially and what it means for the DA and the Government of National Unity. Fascinating interview. Have a listen. William Sanderson Meyer is the longest running political columnist in South Africa. So he knows politicians. He knows them inside out. He's studied them for decades. And so what he wrote this week on Politics Web about John Steenhuisen's infamous, if you're within the ANC, within the DA, very happy, famous, if you're within the ANC interview with News 24, well, it will open a lot of eyes. And William joins us now. Where I'd like to start is right at the back. You said that this was a ransom note from Steenhuisen. We know he hasn't got many options. He's a guy who's been a professional politician, but why a ransom note, William?
I called it a ransom note because in a sense, it's a threat. It's a threat what is behind the threat is he needs something from the DA. It's telling the DA that he's not going to accept his demotion, which is incredibly costly for him in terms of his ego, in terms of his social standing, in terms of his financial situation, that he's not going to accept it and that an alternative has to be found. It's what is extraordinary about it is that he decided to publish his ransom note. I mean, normally extortionists start by sending the note quietly to their victim and hoping that it'll never needs to go into the public eye. John has taken an unusual course with his extortion note.
Is he a bit dumb? And I mean this in you know the most sincere way of saying this, because if anyone stops and thinks about the consequences of what he's done, he's not He's now flat out unemployable. Any employer will look at this and say, whoa, you know, can I trust this guy? It's certainly, he's unelectable from the DA's perspective, unless he's got something lined up with the ANC or News 24. He's really done something really dumb. But is he that kind of politician that shoots first and thinks about the consequences later? Because I think he's not that old, is he?
As it happens, it's his 50th birthday today. So it's not the best way to be launching the last couple of decades of your career essentially destroying your own job and doing grievous damage to his party, the party that he ostensibly wishes to succeed, and severing personal relationships hither and thither. I mean, his attack on Tony Leon is extraordinary. His words for his dear friend Gordon Hill Lewis are scathing. He's an impetuous man. He does fire first and think later often. But I just think he really struggles with the humiliation, and I think he's also ill advised. So let's put it this way: he's resistant to advice. There's a long litany in DA circles of don't criticize, don't go to John with any criticisms, no matter how well intended they are. He takes them personally. He sees them as a betrayal. He is reluctant to act on advice, except he does seem to have relied rather heavily and on very, very poor advice from his chief of staff, John O'Leary. But generally, he struggles with advice. So either he's completely lost it, and I've heard people speculating that there's a personal unraveling taking place. I don't know if that's true, and I hope that isn't the case. I have a lot of sympathy for John. I think he's the victim, in a sense, of his own inadequacies. He has screwed it up. In that sense, it is a Grecian Shakespearean tragedy. It's a man who, instead of coping with the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, stabs himself in the chest with one of the arrows. It's his own personality, temperamental failures, his sense of entitlement. Did he really think that he could there was a deal that he would get the agricultural minister as a quid pro quo for standing aside for Hill Lewis? But did he really think that, irrespective of his performance at agriculture, which has been piss poor, that he would be able to remain in that job forever? I mean, that is levels of entitlement that you normally see only in the ANC.
Yeah, it's not for those of us who have to pay him. And what's involved here financially? Because you just come down to first principles. The voters pay politicians. They don't earn money from anywhere else than the pot that we put into with our taxes. And I think it's around this time of the year that the June year-end companies, i.e. Reed BizNews, get pretty peed off about what we have to put into the pot with the provisional taxes. So that's the starting point. But if you are now paying, they work for us. They're supposed to be public servants. What gives you the right to demand that you have tenure, almost like a university professor on the one hand, and you've kind of explained that, but how much are we paying these guys? How much would we have paid Steenhuisen to do this, to use your word, piss poor job at agriculture?
Well, I think that the basic salary for a minister, and of course there are all kinds of perks of international travel and air tickets and all those add-ons which add substantially to the package. But the cash component is pretty, or the component on which his pension would be calculated is pretty close to $3 million a year. On top of that, you're wrong to say that it's only the taxpayer who pays him, because on top of that, because he couldn't come out on his $3 million, he was also getting some kind of top up from within the DA. I don't know how much that was. So moving from cabinet minister to deputy cabinet minister is a
a $500,000 a year cutting package. Should he slide further down that greasy pole into the great unwashed of MPs in Parliament, he loses another million. So there's a lot at stake financially for Stiernason. We know from the little grubby little scandal about the Uber Eats and the claims of him misusing his DA credit card, which were rejected, that he has had some financial problems. And really, it isn't any of our business, except it is our business in the sense that there is a financial component, as you say. And we would ask that of any DA, of any ANC minister, and I think we're absolutely entitled to see where that path leads us with the DA as well.
So the DA tops him up. So people who are now contributing to the DA through their donations because they think this is a good party that's going to be steadfast are actually paying Stiernason as well, on top of it. The guy how much damage has he done to the party, William?
I think the damage is enormous. I don't, look, we'll only know when the social, when the polling research is done. There are two possibilities. I think, firstly, there's a huge sense that, and this is how the DA and organizations like News 24 were very sympathetic to the ANC. This is how the ANC and the its supportive media are pitching it. Is the DA is John Stiernason has revealed that the DA is no different from the ANC. It's exploitative. It's fundamentally dishonest. It is open to engaging in state capture. So the squeaky clean image of the DA, which is utterly essential to its persona, to its brand, its brand rests on, has been tainted by Stiernason. Now there is a possibility that people who do vote for the DA or would have voted for the DA will put this down to just a spat between personalities. That it does that they'll say, well, look, it does. It means it's sound inferior. It signifies nothing, and that would be the best that the DA can hope for. But my sense is, yes, it is damaging. It's destructive to his career. It's destructive to the DA. He has done huge damage to Tony Leon's professional reputation and to the reputation of his business. Even although I think. The allegations are laughable, but you know, in politics, it doesn't matter. You take the tar brush, fling it about generously, and some of the tar will stick. It'd be interesting to see what happens out of that. No one, I think, in the DA, including Leon and Hill Lewis, want this to continue. They would like to put it behind them as quickly as possible. And that means making a deal of some kind with Stiernason.
What about the allegations he made of state capture? Is there much substance in that? That Tony Leon has actually been abusing his position?
Well, he certainly didn't provide any evidence of it. Not that News 24 questioned him in any kind of way that was designed to elicit evidence. They basically took his allegations at face value. He showed no evidence of it. And if he had evidence, one would have thought that as leader of the party and a minister in the GNU when this was happening, he would have put stop to it immediately. This was his watch. If he saw that Leon and co. were engaged in state capture, surely he should have acted on it. It's a bit, you can't be a whistleblower after the fact when it was on your watch. If he could have put any state capture to the sword immediately.
William, you mentioned News 24. Now, in your column, you also said that they left some blatant, unanswered, unchallenged issues. What were you referring to there?
Well, the one I was referring to was the fact that Stiernason had done a deal in order to survive. They wanted him out of the leadership because he had been performing. He never performed particularly well, but he was performing really badly in the agricultural ministry. And certainly they wanted him out of the leadership. And the deal was done. He would remain as agricultural minister. The unfortunate thing for him is that his performance continued to deteriorate. But he denied absolutely that was a deal. That was raised with him several times by the media, and he completely denied it. And then in his interview with Basson, he admitted to it quite blithely and wasn't challenged at all. But you've always said that this is a complete fabrication and untrue. So, you know, it caught him out as the fiddler in this occasion.
Mm. I guess that the other point that you did make was that there was a court case where Steenhuisen was lambasted by the judge, and yet here he was, for public consumption, telling people how wonderful he had done, and it wasn't really his fault because he picked up a problem that had existed long before his time. Now, the fact there was a court case, the fact that he said these things, how many people actually believe him and bother enough? Just your sense within the political environment. How do you get can you get away with something like that?
Yes, I think you can. I think the general, firstly, agriculture, strangely, well, not strangely, because of course all journalists sit quite happily in the cities and their food comes in a little plastic bag from Woolies. But there's a widely, in the public mind, agriculture is not a big deal. It is a big deal, but it's not. So in that sense, I don't think people worry too much about what he did or didn't do. The foot and mouth disease disaster is incredibly destructive to farming communities. But again, big organized agriculture doesn't care too much about it. It's the small family farms, the small independents, the smaller operators who are really being hit hard. So I think it's hurting. One of the reasons that he got the boot was because it was hurting a core DA constitution. The farming community is traditionally DA supporting, and in KwaZulu-Natal, where I am, it's very, very solidly behind the DA, and these are exactly the farmers who are being affected. There's also this crazy assumption in South Africa that all farmers are Afrikaners, so that anything that which makes it so strange, this AfriMaga thing that John invented, is that in KwaZulu-Natal, the farmers who started the FMD response group are solid DA and generally very, very supportive of what they know is a tough job. But he treated them like dirt. It's just incomprehensible. It is square hole, round peg, square hole, whichever way you want to do it. He doesn't fit the job.
When Pete Keane called me up, a former neighbor of mine from Moy River when I farmed there, and he's a big farmer in the area, he called me up. He had nowhere else to go, really. He was just so frustrated and he needed to talk to someone. And Pete Keane, you can hear, he ain't certainly isn't part of AfriMaga and FMD response that you talk about, the same kind of thing. Whatever AfriMaga is supposed to be, which is also terribly insulting, surely, to a core group of people who vote for the DA who happen to be Afrikaans speaking. What's your thought on that?
Well, the only alternative that core has is to vote either Action SA or Freedom Front. Freedom Front is so has been so unable to break the shackles of its Afrikaner identity that it's not an easy vote for English speakers. Action SA has so many of its own problems. You know, what alternative, if one wants the GNU to continue, and the polls tell us that most South African voters would like it to continue, At some way, you need to continue supporting the DA. And equally, if you are looking, if GNU collapses, what you absolutely need is a very, very strong, fiery principled opposition. And at present, only the DA answers that picture. So whether the DA is in government or whether it's in opposition, for people who are thinking along those lines, 20 to 30% of the population, depending which polls you believe, there isn't really much of an alternative to the DA. So it may not affect them.
Be very interesting to watch that. Just finally, what would you put the chances on CNA's in actually getting an ambassadorship, which is your thesis on what he was angling for with this rather strange interview?
Look, it's bloody hard after that being put into the public domain for them to give him an ambassadorship. How shameless can you be? Well, one must never underestimate how low politicians can sink. But really, I would say it's a diminishing chance of that. But if there isn't that, what the hell is there for him?
Well, make of that what you will. But William's point is very hard to shake. A party that trades on the clean alternative to a corrupt ANC. Can it survive a scandal? Can it survive impunity? Maybe one or the other, but not both at the same time. Whether Steenhuisen's ransom note gets paid, in other words, whether he gets paid off and shuffled quietly to a plum ambassadorial location, courtesy of the DA's weight in the government of national unity, and there'll be trade-offs for that too from the ANC, you can be sure. Or whether he gets nothing at all will tell us a lot about who's really running the DA right now. A quiet deal that makes Steenhuisen go away quietly will confirm exactly what he accuses the party of being. Cutting him loose entirely 3 months before the local elections risks a public war that the DA cannot fully control. Well, that's The Edge for today. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. For more, head to biznews.com. Till tomorrow. Cheerio. Start your day a step ahead. BizNews Insider. It delivers the business stories that matter every morning straight to your inbox. Sharp, fast, and free. Subscribe now. In uncertain times, good information is priceless. The BizNews Conference is heading back to the Drakensberg. Join me, Alec Hogg, from the 11th to the 14th of August for BNC 9, Champagne Sports Resort, where it all began and where our community gathers for honest conversations, smart investing insights, and direct access to some of South Africa's sharpest minds. Come and rub shoulders with the best we've got. 28 keynote speakers, 3 days. Seats are available now. Book your seat by clicking the link in the description.